So no, I don't know if I'm starting. I'm starting with being pathetic on video. So I gave a talk yesterday in McGill in Montreal, and this is the handout, or this is the front page of the first page of the handout, which was the only really original page. The other pages I've actually attached before. And the pathetic thing is that I flew back this morning. I just arrived. I'm exhausted. The day hasn't begun, and I'm already dead tired. So hopefully today's class will go well. I prepared it on the plane, or I prepared part of it on the plane back. Anyway, so the talk was a great success. 20-something people came. It was in the physics department. And so I had to sort of pretend, you know, I had to set up the marketing so that it would look like physics. Mm-hmm. And it worked successfully. So they failed to notice that I was faking everything. More seriously, so I'm not sure if I really said it at some point, but the Lie algebras we will be working with eventually are sort of deformations of semi-simple Lie algebras, but in a different sense that was considered before, in as much as I know, in a different sense that was ever considered before. And these are deformations that make these Lie algebras solvable. And solvable means you can solve it. So, and that's somehow the key point. And there are lots of other places. Okay, now that particular place, not theory, actually in some sense comes from physics. So this strategy of writing invariants using R matrices actually started in physics. Young and Baxter were physicists. And more specifically, you can actually, you know, show a slide or two explaining how from quantum field theory you get to guess the existence of such R's and algebras A and all of that. But it comes from a more general place, and it may as well be that there are other places in physics that could benefit from a similar treatment, where you replace the algebra by an approximation of the algebra. So this solvable approximation. So that was the question I posed in my talk. It went well. I hereby pose it to you too. If you really want to know more detail about it, you can either wait, and I may or may not say it at some point later on in this class, or you can click on the top right of the page, or more precisely, copy that URL to your browser, and there is a video of the talk, which you're welcome to watch. Again, it worked out well, so I'm happy. I was happy. Anyway, that's the front page. The next page and the next five pages of your handout are, as usual for Fridays, a Mathematica notebook. So, Juan, now I'm switching mostly to the... I ended up not doing anything with the blackboard, but anyway. So, mostly a Mathematica notebook, mostly continues with the brute treatment of our material, let me go through it, but first I have to review what we did. And I actually made some changes to what we did, so I highlighted them in yellow. And I made the changes partially because I realized that I can do things better, and partially because I realized that my conventions were not matching other conventions, and I just changed some signs. So here is the review, okay? So given a knot and an R matrix, which is an element in the universal enveloping algebra of a Lie algebra tensor, another copy of that universal enveloping algebra, you can construct an invariant by putting R near each crossing and by putting R near each crossing and then multiplying around the node. I don't need to repeat this, I hope. Then there is the PBW basis, and I have nothing new to say about it. So basically, you can order the in the universal enveloping algebra, you can order the generators to say alphabetical order or any other order, and that's the PBW basis. We are especially looking at the Lie algebra G0, and here is a modification from last time. So I've reversed the roles of E and F relative to last time. And the only thing, the only difference it makes is it flips the sign in all three commutation relations. That's the only difference. And the two algebras are isomorphic. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make a difference overall. It's just notational. Okay?
So so is it back to the CUW?
It's back to, well, it's ELF now, but I've switched at some point. My commutation relations were confused me.
Yeah.
Just the by J.
So it's not ELF anymore.
It is ELF. It is E, L, and F, but I've switched the roles of E and F.
Okay.
That's all. I've only changed signs. No, nothing. Don't. The only difference is signs, nothing else. Okay? But sorry, and also in the R matrix, before it was F tensor E, and now it is E tensor F. Okay? And then so this is the classical R matrix, and the quantum R matrix, the thing which solves Young-Baxter, is the exponential of lowercase r by a miracle. Again, and we will verify this miracle again. Okay, so so let's continue with the changes. So is this visible? Is this sufficiently large, or should I enlarge the font?
200.
200? Okay. Maybe we should just change the sitting arrangement. So there are two changes here. So one change is that, I've changed the signs, okay? In the commutation relations. And the other change is before I declared the commutation relation of E and L, but also the commutation relation of L and E. And now, instead, at the end of all the definitions of commutation relations, I've added a line saying the commutation relation of, so the bracket of Y and X is equal to minus the bracket of X and Y. Okay? So therefore I don't need to, so I built in anti-symmetry. The reason I wasn't doing it before is because but first all other rules apply. So this applies if nothing else applies. And the reason I wasn't doing it before is that it's a slightly problematic. It tends to lead to infinite loops. If you mistype something, so none of the rules applies, it will compute its, it will take the bracket in the opposite order with a minus sign, but then you mistype something, so none of the rules still apply, so it will, basically, it will get into an infinite loop. I decided I don't care. We'll try not to mistype things. Okay. Next modification. So remember that I actually need to look at a graded version of the universal enveloping algebra. So it's really getting hot here. So we need to look at a graded version of the universal enveloping algebra so that we can take infinite sums, right? I mean, I wrote the exponential of the R matrix, and I had some. I think I mentioned what the grading convention was. So I think it was the degree of H, E, L, and F, the degrees of H, E, L, and F were 1, 1, 0, and 0. Again, it might have been different last time, but that's because I've switched F and E. Okay? But And then, sort of in various computations, you need to compute only up to a certain degree. Okay? And one way to do it is to write a little routine that computes the degree of each expression by counting how many H's and how many E's there are in it. But then I decided to do something else. And the other thing that I've decided to do is to introduce a new variable which carries the degree. So the new variable is h-bar, and h-bar in Mathematica, by the way, is escape hb escape, so it's not too hard to type. And the degree of h-bar is 1, and now I reduce the degrees of these two to 0, but I commit myself to every time I write a lowercase h to multiply it by a coefficient h-bar. And every time I write a lowercase e to multiply it by a coefficient h-bar. And now if I have power series, their degree is just determined by the number of h-bars in them. Okay? And then I've introduced a new global variable. So dollar is just in Mathematica, dollar is just a character. You could use it for a name of a variable, right? I could say dollar is equal to 7, okay? But sort of by convention, things that start with dollar are global variables that sort of exist outside of an individual routine, okay? So I have global target degree, and I set it to be 3, but I can reset it later to be 7. If I want the target degree to be 7, I can reset it. And then I make the definition. So I make a definition pertaining to h bar. Oops, sorry, my mistake. I should have put it in presentation mode. Okay, so now it will not turn itself off. Okay, so a definition pertaining to h-bar, did we go through it? By the way, you must have a copy of Mathematica. You really must have a copy of Mathematica, and I'm happy to cover your expenses. But if you don't sort of play with these things, you're never going to beat me, and the purpose is to beat me, right? We work with the purpose is to eventually do computations that so far I haven't done. Now you know. Okay, so I think we've done this before, but anyway, a definition pertaining to h is that if you raise h to a degree d, where d is greater than the target degree, you get 0. So that's my way of bounding the degree. Okay, now should I go through the syntax of this line, the meaning? So, you know, maybe I'll go through it very briefly. So first of all, you know, let me copy paste it and without the first thing and just try to execute it. So now it's, I hereby define h bar to the power d if d is greater than the target degree, to be 0. So what will happen, the computer, so okay, I do not want to execute all initialization files, and the computer is complaining because the tag power is protected, right? So basically, the thing written on the left is the tree, power on the right, power as the head, on the left, h-bar, on the right, well, you know, without going into how it is represented, but it's a pattern named D, okay? So now I try to assign a definition to this, and by default, Mathematica associates the definition with the head of the tree. So every time it sees a tree with that head, it will see if the definition applies, and if it applies, it will apply it. However, the head of our tree is power, and power is protected, so I cannot assign to it. Now, I could unprotect it and define, but Mathematica has an alternative facility, and this is to associate definitions to the next level, to the symbols appearing in the next level. And then, when evaluating another expression, whenever it will see something to which the definition was associated, so whenever it will see an H bar, it will see if the thing above it is a power, and if it is, it will try to apply the definition. So the syntax for that is same thing, but associate the definition with H bar. That's the slash common. Okay? So now we know how to bound degrees. And okay. The next modification is that the classical Young-Baxter, instead of being, first of all, instead of being F times E, it's now E times F, because I've switched the roles. And secondly, I've committed to multiplying every occurrence of H and every occurrence of E with H bar. So now I have to live up to the commitment, and then I've entered an extra H bar here. So basically, the H bar here says that the classical R matrix is of degree 1, so exponentiating it makes sense, because you get higher and higher degrees. Okay. The next thing that got changed is the exponential function. So the exponential function, before I had, it was defined the exponential, and then there was an input, and then there was an n, which stood for how many steps to compute. Okay? Now, instead of declaring how many steps to compute, I just continue adding terms until t is the current terms being added. So while t is not equal to zero, you keep adding terms. And since I've set the I have a target degree that is finite, and since I'm committing to only exponentiating things of degree one or more, eventually t will become zero. So this makes sense. Okay, and then I've added also stop if k is greater than 20. And that was just because I had a few runaway computations where I made a mistake, and I just didn't want to. It's theoretically, this stop if k is greater than 20 is not necessary, but I've added there for essentially for debugging. Okay. Any comments, questions?
Why is there like a plus plus when you divide t by k factorial? There's a plus plus. Actually.
So okay, because okay. So, so plus plus k, like in many other programming languages, means take the current value of k, add 1 to it, and output the result. Okay? So it's not so, you know, as opposed to k plus 1. K plus 1 will output k plus 1, but will not modify k. Plus plus k adds 1 to k, and output the result. So this is, so I first set k to 0, and then within this while, so while a certain condition is met, I add to the sum t divided by, well, increment k, and then compute the factorial. Okay?
So how do you specify the degree So this is like
so the degree is specified in advance in this target degree variable.
But in the routine, I don't see you compare with the.
No, what happens is that I stop adding things to the exponential the moment t is the current term being added.
Mm-hmm.
So right, so t I always add to t, so t always becomes t times u.
Yeah.
So that computes powers of t, and then as soon as t, so and I continue this loop so long as t is not equal to zero. So the moment t becomes zero, you stop adding. So this is in some sense nilpotent exponentiation. It's an exponentiation on the assumption that u to some high power will be zero. Okay? And if you enter a u which is not nilpotent, then in principle you'll get an infinite loop.
Ah, I see.
But to prevent this, I've added the condition also make k less than 20. So my assumption is that we will never do anything to degree higher than 20. Or, you know, if we really want to do something to degree higher than 20, we will remove this line or modify it or something.
Hmm.
Okay? So you know what? Let's see how it works. So first of all, let me quit Mathematica and restart, just because I don't want to... So you know, let's do u exponential of what? Of e. I don't know. So u of e1. That's not going to be u. This will be a failure. Let's see. Sorry, it's asking me to... Okay, this will be a failure. Why? So this is exactly the reason why I added the bound at 20. So I failed to multiply e by h bar. So therefore it's not nilpotent. So if I take the same thing, so you know what? Let's copy, paste it. And multiply by h bar, then now it will go only to degree 3 because before I declared the target degree to be 3. Now if I wanted to do the same to a higher degree, I would copy paste it and set the target degree to be 5 and then compute this exponential, and it's the same thing, but the degree now goes to 5. Okay? So finally, I just to make sure that I didn't mess up anything, I'm verifying again the Young-Baxter equation. So this is Rademeister 3, but I'm doing it only to degree 3. Why am I doing it only to degree 3? Actually, there's a good reason for it. So let's do it. First of all, here it is. The reason is that it took time. You see that there was a time delay? So in fact, if I do the same thing, so let me do the same thing, but now to degree 4. Okay? So it finished. It's not so bad, right? But you know, if you think about it, what's happening here? So to degree 4, you'll have, in the exponential, you'll have 5 terms. Even more than 5 terms. In fact, let's just see how many terms you get. So let's compute R12. The target degree is still 4. So R12 is, oh my god, right? It has lots of terms in it. Then you take a product of 3 such things, use the distributive law. So, I mean, I don't know, there are 20 terms here, so you get 20 cubed. That's 800? No, that's 8,000. So you have 8,000 terms, and on each of them you have to do the PBW simplification. So it's kind of a miracle that it finished. Okay? So part of the purpose is to do better than that. We're still incredibly stupid.
in how we work with things. Okay. So this is the line separating old stuff from new stuff. So only now we're starting with new stuff. So
are you gonna show us why it's true? I mean, yeah, like
mathematically?
Yeah.
I could. Should I? I mean, it's a.
Like you said, it seems to be a miracle here.
Right, it's a miracle. Should we take a 5 minutes break for mathematics, even though it's the brute day? 5 minutes break for mathematics, okay. You know, I mean, we should remember that we're still mathematicians, okay? So what's lowercase r? So lowercase r is h tensor l plus e tensor f. I believe. So, okay. R satisfies two equations. And in fact, we checked them. We checked them by machine. So it satisfies the classical Young-Baxter equation, but there was also an additional thing that turned out to be zero by miracle. Okay? We checked them by machine, we could check them by hand, but anyway, let me tell you what these equations are. So the claim is that R12 bracket R13 is equal to zero, and plus R13 bracket R23 is equal to zero. Okay, first of all, the sum of these two things, if you look at it, is exactly the classical Young-Baxter equation. So this is really the assertion that the classical Young-Baxter equation is sort of super satisfied. You know, it is satisfied, but also one term of it is equal to zero. Okay? Now, why is it true? So in principle, should I check it? I mean, it's in principle just a...
You can just plug it in the program.
You can plug it in the program now. You see, now you're becoming cheap like me. but you can do it by hand. You can actually compute, you know? Should I? I mean, you know, let's do the first one, okay? So what does the first one mean? The first one mean H1L2 plus E1F2 bracket with H1L3 plus E1L3 F3. Okay? But what does it mean? So remember that
different indices.
This means sit on the first tensor factor, this means sit on the second tensor factor. Mm-hmm. Okay? So written in sort of alternatively, sorry, let me think of it so this just means
so different indices.
No, let me just think of it in the better way, the way I'm actually thinking of things, namely the commutation relations are so this is written in so this is happening in the universal enveloping algebra of three copies of the Lie algebra, so I goes from 1 to 3, where the rules are the same as the usual rules but with a delta ij, so different indices commute. Okay, so now let's see. So this is a sum of, this is, what is it called, the FIFO rule, FILO rule, last? How do you open something bilinear when it's a sum of two things? There is a rule that all math educators hate. The first,
sorry, just the
FOIL, maybe?
FOIL.
I've heard that before, but it was a long
so
time ago.
You take first, okay, sorry, so now let me educate you. So A plus B times C plus D is equal to, you take the product of the first things, so it's AC, plus the product of the outer things, which is AD, plus the product of the inner things, which is BC, plus the product of the last things, which is BD. That's the FOIL rules. And math educators hate it because you're supposedly not understanding that you've actually used the distributive law, okay? But I love it because I understand that I use the distributive law, and I always get confused if I don't use the FOIL law. So, by FOIL, this is the bracket of this with this. But let's see. L2 commutes with L3, and H commutes with H. So it's 0. Plus the bracket of this with that. So it's L commutes with F because they're on different tensor factors, and H commutes with E because H is central. So that's 0. Plus this with this. So again, these commute and E commutes with H because H is central, so you get 0, plus this with this, and again, E commutes with E, and F commutes with F, so it's 0.
So it's also super satisfying. Right?
It's also super satisfying, right. Now, had you done the same here, you would have more things to check, and not all of them would be 0, but it's just a simple-minded check. Okay? But now, let's do the Young-Baxter equation. So, what's the Young-Baxter equation? It's here. So, it's e to the R12, e to the R13, e to the R23. That's the left-hand side. Okay? So, these two commute. The exponential, the product of two exponentials of commuting things is the exponential of the sum. So this is e to the R12 plus R13, e to the R23. Now, this sum commutes with this. This is the second equation. So you can flip the order. So this is e to the R23, e to the R12 plus e to the R13. And now these two commute, so you can unpack. So it's e to the R23, e to the R13, e to the R12. Notice that I unpacked it in the opposite order than here. Okay? So I told you it's easy. Okay? But it's a miracle, right? It's not generally true. Okay. Okay, anyway. Okay, so next I wanted to implement the meta multiplication, the stitching formula, which is the meta product law. Okay, so I think we went through it, but too quickly. So let me go through it less quickly. Okay, so I want to do the MIJK multiplication, meaning multiply subscripts I and J, calling the result K. Okay? It's clear what it is, right? And I want to tell you how this applies to an expression called script E. Okay? So what you do is, you simplify script E, to which you apply two rules. So one rule is, every time you see a lowercase u, okay, you replace it by the join of three things. So, first of all, I have to tell you what join does, okay? So, what does join do? Join of f of ab
with f of bc will give you f of, basically it, well, you see what it did. It joined the two things.
Okay? So now I apply join to three things. Maybe I'll make it a little more spacey so that you can see that there are three things here. One, two, three, and end of join. No, sorry, I don't know why I failed to put a here.
Okay, so what are the three things? So the three things are, take U, right? U is a big word of with E's and L's and F's and possibly other generators if that was a differently algebra. So take the word U, and every place you see an anything sub I or J, you delete it. So delete cases does exactly what the name suggests, meaning it deletes all the cases inside U of things that match the pattern written here, and the pattern is anything sub under a subscript I or J. So basically, you take your long word and you remove anything that has an I or a J from it. Okay? And then you merge into it. Okay, so what does cases do? Okay, so maybe we should learn what cases does, the command cases. So it's sort of the opposite of delete cases. So cases, okay, so cases within a list and then a pattern gives the list of all things that match the pattern. Okay? Let's test it. So let's do cases within A1, B2, C1. Sorry, I should have put it as a list. So cases within this of all things which are of the form anything underscore one. So it should give me, you know, if we're lucky, it should give me the list A1, C1. It did. Okay? And now cases also allows you to say, instead of just select cases, it allows you to apply an operation to them. So cases pattern arrow right hand side will select all the cases, all the things here that match the pattern, and apply the rule, this pattern goes to the right hand side. So let's do it. So inside here, so instead of just selecting all the things of the type x underscore 1, I will replace each place you see x underscore 1 by, I don't know what, f of x. Whatever, f of x. So now I should get f of a, f of c. Okay, let's see. I did. Okay, so back to our thing. Well, every place you see an x sub I, you replace it by x sub k. And every place you see x sub j, you replace it by x sub k. So basically what I did is I have this long word with, you know, u1, u7, sorry, not u, e1, e7, f7, and so on. And at some point I have ei, ej, fi, fj, I don't know, some. So then I replace it by, I remove all of these, I remove all the participating thing, and instead I put them at the end. Right? And then I
So in particular, it means that it ends up putting all the I's before all the J's, but with both the I's and the J's converted to K's. So now I have all the things I wanted to split out, put at the end with K's on them. And now I just multiply again, back again. So yeah.
But you deleted everything that looks like x sub I or x sub j from U before you apply the cases?
No, I did not assign this. I did not assign the new value to U.
So
this is the sublist of U that is the non-ij.
Okay.
This is the I sublist with the I replaced by K.
So those create a new list?
Yeah.
Does that list come with a name or?
No. It's just right. But then I join these three lists.
Okay.
So effectively what I did is I removed all the I's to the end and all the J's to the end in order, with names replaced by K. And then I simply remultiply. Okay, so UU means reorder. And unfortunately, this is not enough because I'm regarding the H's as coefficients. So the next thing is to replace HI or J by HK everywhere. And that's it. So, come to think of it, I could probably optimize it a bit, but, I don't really care. It's good enough as it is. So anyway, so first of all, I look at some specific product. So the specific product here is E1, L4, F2. And then I take that product and I put the ones before the twos and put those into three. So, but the ones are already before the twos. So the result should be E3, L4, F3. Right? Let's see. If E3, L4, F3. Right, that's what I got. And it kept it in E's before L's after F, before F's order, in the L4. Okay? And now, if I do, so this didn't do anything. It just replaced the indices. But now if I put the twos before the ones, and then the threes, into threes, then this should become F2 times, right? So let's compute it by hand. Okay? E1, L4, F2, to which I apply a stitch strand 2 and 1, calling the result strand 3. So this should be, so first I put the 2s. So the 2s should give me, F2, but with the 2 replaced by 3. Then I put the 1s, so E3, and then L4. Okay? And now, if I try to reorder it to L4, I have to commute the F across the E and across the L. So I'll get across the L the commutation is free, but across the E I will get an H. Okay, so this should be H3L4 plus E3L4F3, and here, to be honest, it's a plus or minus because I'm not sure which way does the commutation relation work. So let's check it. Okay, it's a minus. Next.
you know, I never trust myself. Okay? So, so let's check meta-associativity. So, I'm looking at all possible products of elves on four strands with degree up to three. That's just a big sort of, if there is a bug, it will be shown. And for each such U, I compute the difference of the, you know, of one side of meta-associativity minus the other side of meta-associativity. So basically I should take, so this should give me a long table of zeros, and then I take the union of that table, so it should give me a single zero. And, you know, if something in it is non-zero, I'm in trouble. Okay? So, you know, let's first get in trouble. So, you know, let's write meta-associativity incorrectly. So let's, okay, no, let's do it differently. Let's copy-paste it so that we don't ruin what's already what the right thing. And then instead of 1-1, let me write 2-1-1. So that's a kind of associativity with some commutativity added. It should be false, right? Also, if I print this table, it will fill the screen and sort of the computer will scream at me. So let me print it in short form. So this should give me many errors. Well, only 55 errors. No, 57 errors. Okay, fine. And then the same thing without the artificial mistake gives a list of zeros. Okay? Now I can compute the invariant of the trefoil. So the trefoil has three crossings. So, okay, if I label the strands, sorry, if I label the vicinity of the crossings, but in order, then I'll have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then I have a crossing where 4 goes over 1, I have a crossing where 2 goes over 5, and a crossing where 6 goes over 3, so I need to multiply these three elements. Let me do it to degree 2, because this is already huge and I'm printing the whole thing, so even this will be a large printout. So, what is it? Here it is. Well, not so large, but you know. But basically, these are many words in the universal enveloping algebra, where I have various is and else and f on strands 1 through 6. But now I need to meta-multiply, to stitch in order. So I need to take the same product and stitch 1 and 2 calling the result 1, then 1 and 3 calling the result 1, then 1 and 4, then 1 and 5, then 1 and 6. So at the end I'll get everything on strand number 1. And that would be the invariant of the trefoil. So let me compute it. Here you go. This is the invariant of the trefoil. To degree 2. Now let's compute it to degree 3. That took some time, actually half a second. So let's do it to degree 4. I've added timing to see how long it took, and it took 0.54 seconds. So let's do it to degree 4. So copy, paste, raise the degree to 4. No, not 5, 4, and add a short. So it will only print it, oops, it will only print it, you know, I don't want the whole mess. Oh, not too bad, 2.5 seconds, less than 3 seconds, okay. But it grows exponentially, no, it doesn't grow exponentially, I think it actually grows polynomially in some formal sense. Yeah, it actually grows polynomially, but with an horrible polynomial, and this is, sorry, this grows polynomially in the degree, but if I was to raise the complexity of the knot, it will grow exponentially, because I will be multiplying more and more r's, and each R has several terms. So this is polynomial in the degree, but exponential in the knot, and if I want to compute anything for knots with 50 crossings, this will fail. Okay? So, so we're still pathetic. But pathetic or not, this is the invariant of the trefoil. Okay. Now, where did I go? What? It's jumping too quickly. Okay. Maybe I'll state a theorem and then the theorem will also explain my notation. Okay? So, you know, I want to write things to... I want to make the computations work to all orders at once, to all degrees at once. I'm not there yet. Okay? But I want them to work to all degrees at once. So, Juan, can you turn the video? The theorem is that R, as an element of U tensor U, is equal to the normal ordering of E to the HL plus here, E to the H minus 1 over H EF in the ordering E tensor LF. Okay? So what does this mean, first of all? What does the right-hand side mean? It means, so you regard this as a commutative power series in, so you expand it as a power series, and it's a commutative power series in H, L, E, and F. Notice that there is supposed division by H, but the numerator is divisible by H, right? So this is a positive, all coefficients of H, all powers of H here are positive. So this is a commutative, you regard it as a commutative power series in H, L, E, and F. And then you turn it into an element of the universal enveloping algebra by writing all the L's before all the F's on the second tensor factor and all the E's on the first tensor factor. Right, so this is a polynomial in all four variables, but I write the L's and the F's on the second tensor factors, the E's on the first tensor factor, and I don't need to specify where H is, because H commutes with everything else. Okay? So that's the meaning of this theorem. Okay? More precisely, what I'm claiming is that this is equal to E to the power H1L1 plus E1F1. It's not an obvious theorem, because when you expand this as a, you know, this is sum of H1L1 plus H1L2 plus E1F2 plus E1F2 to the power k divided by k factorial. When you expand this, you'll get on the second tensor factor, on the first tensor factor you have H's and E's, and H's and E's commute, so the ordering doesn't matter. On the second tensor factor, you'll get L's and F's in all sorts of orderings, and L's and F's don't commute. So the claim is that when you will order, that if you order them so that all the L's are before all the F's, then this is the power series that describes the result. Okay? I only have 1 minute left, so I will not explain how
the program is written. I will explain it next time. But this double struck O in mathematical notation, in tech notation, this is BBO, blackboard bold O. So this little routine here is an implementation of the normal ordering operator that I've defined over there, or that I've sketched over there. And I'm not going through how the implementation works, but let's just check it. So let me check. So let's give a brute proof of this theorem. A brute proof is by computing it to a high degree. So let's set the target degree to be 6, and let's compute the normal ordering of the exponential of, so the same thing as over there, except I've multiplied by h bar to make the degrees right. And then the syntax is a bit different. So the syntax is put all the e's on strand 1, and put all the L's and all the F's on strand 2 in the ordering specified. So L1 and F2 go to strand 2 in this order. And then check if this is equal to R12. So here is the brute proof. I hit enter and the computer says true. And that's it. Now, what do I owe you? So we have to stop. But I owe you an explanation of how the program works, and also why is this true? It's a sort of some commutation relation business. It's not so hard. But even more importantly, what do you do with it? So the point is that I will try to write everything in some normal ordering, and then instead of manipulating individual elements, I will be manipulating formulas that work to an arbitrary degree, and then I will be able to compute the invariant of the trefoil to arbitrarily high degree. And in fact, I think the answer is it's down further in this notebook, but we will do it next time. Okay. So, hopefully see you on Tuesday.